most of the news reports indicate that EPA was somewhat taken aback by the ruling. But I think that, like any other time, that in this instance, you know, EPA regulations or EPA regulations in general go through sort of a long and complicated process where at any point in the process they can reach significant delays, whether it's in the first sort of public disclosure of their plan and the public comment period, or in this case, if they feel like they need to go back for more scientific data and justification, and then also just sort of in getting the publications and the proposed regulations out the door. I think this was probably, oh gosh, a proposal that, you know, absent all of the sort of political back and forth during the Bush administration years, had been delayed at least three or four times during the course of this administration because of some of the political back and forth between the White House and the EPA and some other considerations. So ultimately, I think that they're an agency that is certainly used to unexpected delays and unexpected turns of events. And so, like they said they'll wait and they'll certainly review the proposed regulations that they had put forward again in due time.
Now, your background is with Energy Department at one point in your career, and Energy Department doesn't exactly exist to ensure the supply of energy per se, but this rule would have definitely curtailed some energy supplies by most accounts by forcing the closure of certain plants. What kind of interplay is there between energy and EPA when there's an energy-related rulemaking of this magnitude going on?
The EPA and the federal government in general, for a lot of these rulemaking processes, have a very robust sort of interagency process, and especially there's a number of points of intersection where DOE or any other organization that has relevance in terms of the impacts of the proposed rulemaking get to weigh in. There is sort of a level of, you know, EPA authority and primacy in the process, of course, because they are meant to sort of safeguard the scientific integrity of what they do, but then also some of the findings. But within each of these, regulatory undertakings, there's also a cost and impacts analysis. And so one can imagine that an agency like DOE and several others, you know, when it comes to, you know, the greenhouse gas regulations that were just passed for vehicles, for example, DOE and transportation played a fairly robust role. So I think that there is an interagency process that goes on that sort of allows folks to weigh in on either in a very formal way in terms of putting together the regulations, or at least having some sort of say in or reaction to what the proposals are and what the proposed impact might be.
Now, much has been made about the fact that the EPA, by statute, is not supposed to consider the costs to the economy and so forth when issuing rules. But is that really possible? Because they were reducing the amount of ozone and pollutants, you know, by several distinct single parts per billion from, you know, 73 to 71, whatever it was. And that would cause all of this economic fallout, according to other parties. But why not, as an EPA, say, well, let's just make it zero if they don't have to consider the ultimate cost of it? It sounds like they can't avoid thinking about the cost. Otherwise, they would have made it 70 or 69 or 50.
Yeah, it's certainly in this case, it's certainly cost is certainly a legal term of art. And I am not a lawyer, so I don't want to go into, you know, the absolute specifics of it. But when you look at how EPA makes regulations based on sort of, you know, best available technologies and controls and those types of things, there is an inherent economic underpinning there, right? I mean, it's based on what kind of technologies are out there and available for companies to purchase. And so to say that they don't take economics into consideration, well, they could be putting, you know, down regulations for things that don't exist or things that, you know, they hope would exist somewhere down the line. So they have to walk a fine line between making sure that the regulations they put in place are actually things that companies can do and have access to. And I think that anyone who says that the economic impact of these regulations isn't taken into consideration somewhere along the line, whether it's in the EPA or within sort of the White House review or the interagency review, or certainly Congress's opinion about what the agencies have come up with, is not being realistic. I think the whole process is designed to be able to put regulations in place that allow for the proper functioning of industry or whatever the sector of the economy is that that's being regulated. And if you don't take cost into consideration there, then you aren't really, you know, putting forth regulations that are practical and implementable. And I think if the EPA were to go the route of never considering costs, then they would very quickly make themselves ineffective.
We're speaking with Sarah Ladislaw, the Senior Fellow for Energy and National Security Programs at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I asked you earlier about what the reaction in EPA might be. What do you think your old department, Energy, say Secretary Steve Chu, is thinking right now about this?
Yeah, you know, I think that the Department of Energy is this wonderful, slightly schizophrenic organization that deals with three main baskets of things. One is the nuclear side, which does not necessarily pertain to this. The other is science and technology development and deployment. And then the other is energy policy. And I think that the Department of Energy under Steve Chu has certainly decided that it likes to spend most of its time focusing on the science and technology deployment opportunities. And in that case, I think that a lot of these, you know, environmental regulations, one of the benefits that they do provide to society is a reason for sort of taking the external costs of, you know, environmental damage and putting them into the process in a way that, you know, sheer economics just wouldn't get them into the process. And so that actually serves to drive a lot of technology and innovation in industries that don't necessarily wouldn't move that fast if they weren't required to by regulation and by governments. And so there is one side of, you know, I'm sure the folks that look at environmental controls and technologies and moving the ball forward, where these regulations would actually have helped move their work forward. On the other hand, this was the, you know, of the category of clean air environmental regulations that have been proposed by the EPA. Over the course of this administration, it certainly was an expensive one. It was one where industry was very concerned about the impact it would have on, you know, a whole variety of different sources of energy production and different sectors of the economy. And so to the extent that, you know, those voices read into what's going on in DOE energy policymaking minds, I think that they probably see that as a potential accommodation to an industry that, you know, is very important to the American economy.